So as long as I follow that way, I have nothing to fear.
Yeah. So we're going to introduce our speaker, Sarah Kay from Surviving Against All Odds Group of NA and the Baltimore. What's that word?
Baltimore City.
Baltimore City area of NA.
Yeah, I did a terrible job writing city, Baltimore something. I'm Sarah, I'm an addict. Just making sure my vapes aren't near me so muscle memory doesn't kick in. All right, good morning. It is 9:45. So I love meetings on Sunday mornings. I love that I was asked to speak this morning. Thank you for whoever decided that was a good idea. Because for a lot of years, my home group was Saturday and Sunday morning from 9 to 10 o'clock on a beach in kind of the middle of nowhere in Florida. And so I have muscle memory. I think that was my home group for 11 years. Like, I have muscle memory that on Saturday and Sunday morning, I get right. Which is good, because for a lot of years, I had muscle memory of getting up and getting right. And early on, like, I needed to reprogram myself about what getting right in the morning looked like. And the other thing is, like, when I first got clean, I wasn't sleeping. I don't know if anybody else has had that experience. I wasn't really good at that. I also wasn't good at peeing or some other human functions. But like, there was some part of me when I heard I needed to get a home group that was like, nah, go to morning meetings until you can sleep. But then, like, don't commit to that, because the weekends are for sleeping in. Not like I had any like big job that I was like earning the right to sleep in on a Saturday morning. Nothing incredible was happening during my week, but my brain told me like, sleep in, hit a night meeting. Except in early recovery for me, I was nuts. So the earlier in the day I could get recovery in, I would have like 1-3% better chance of just getting through that day. So that was my home group, and talk about a spiritual experience. I asked when I checked in, I was like, so, you know, a lot of the other meetings have topics. What is the closing speaker? And they say, well, that's usually the spiritual speaker. So I'm here to save you. You are here to save you. I saved me just for today. I don't know that I have anything particularly wise to say about it other than my clean date is January 27th, 2011, and like, just for today, that's gonna stay my clean date. And that wasn't the day I walked into NA. I walked into NA about 90 days earlier and did a bunch of stuff that's not NA and picked up key tags and then realized what it was and then finally picked up a white key tag. So I am from Baltimore, it says city. I'm from Baltimore area. And I left the state, I left Baltimore to get clean in Florida, not knowing Florida was the recovery capital of the world. I didn't know enough about recovery to know things like that. I didn't know that detox existed. I found out after I detoxed in somebody's bathroom and then was pissed. Like, there's a place you can go with doctors. And nurses that help you shower and stuff like that. And I thought treatment was for fancy people. Like, I thought it was for celebrities. Thank God that in my active addiction that I heard about NA. And I heard about it in a pretty dark way. I heard about it because I was living with a guy. I was living with people. You know how it is. Like, you start off having a roommate, and then after a while, just like random people may or may not be living in your house. And so one of those random people, a friend of mine, Nick, you know, in my world, I thought Nick had a problem. Nick had a problem because he was an alcoholic. Nick had a problem because Nick would drink and fall down. Even if he was sitting on the floor, he would fall down and need stitches, right? That was Nick's problem, was that he would slur his words. Nick's problem was that he would puke. I had a raging dope habit, but like Nick had a problem, right? Nick had a problem because he couldn't keep his job. Ignoring the fact that like, yeah, I was employable, but like my whole world was work to use. I didn't think that I had a drug or alcohol problem. I thought my problem was I wasn't good enough at making money. Like that was the side of the equation that wasn't working. I needed to be better at making money, and that way I could handle my addiction. And why was that? Because I didn't know about NA. I didn't know there was a way out. When I was using, I thought it was a one-way street, you know? Like maybe with this drug, maybe with the hippie drugs, you can like start and stop and peace, love, and like maybe you'll end up being an old hippie. And with alcohol, there was AA, which was about alcohol. But then like once you graduate, once you're in like grad school of drugs, then you reach the ones where it's like, it is, once you start, there is no stop. And like, I wasn't running into people who were like, I used like you used, and like, look at me, I have like a good credit score or anything like that, you know? And so like when I think about, you know, what the God of my understanding looks like, part of that is, part of the early evidence is that like, I wasn't in treatment, I wasn't looking for it, I wasn't looking for a solution or whatever, and it bumped into me. And it, am I close enough to the mic? People in the back, yeah? Okay, all right. Trying not to blow you out. So Nick had a problem, it was alcohol. I did not have a problem, despite all evidence, despite the fact that like, yeah, I used every day for a couple of months, and then, And it was fun. We were just partying every day, right? It was fun. And then a snowstorm happened, like a bad one. And I called my boy, I called my connect, D. D, yo, I'm ready. And he's like, oh yeah, no, I can't go. The buses are shut down. Because I was at that level of death. My drug dealer had to take a bus to go into the neighborhood I wasn't allowed to go into. And he's like, yeah, no, I can't go because the buses are shut down. And I'm like, you have to, because it's weird. I woke up this morning and I have the flu. And he's like, yeah, no, you don't have the flu. You're dope sick. And like, I guess some part of me knows I was an addict beforehand, because like, yeah, while that was like a bad thing, at the same time, it wasn't like a like, oh man, now something bad has happened, and so like I should change. Now, that was more like, accept it. Like, you've lost a limb, and so now, like, learn how to walk without that limb. It wasn't like a, oh, man, call a doctor, go to, you know, whatever, that kind of thing. And I was like, yeah, no, we got to get it done. So, like, I'm out on Charles Street digging out my car with a stolen bowl, you know. You're like, we're going to make this happen or whatever. And like at that point, it was like, I'm committed. Here we go. Because like I said, I didn't have a message of hope. I didn't have like any addict can stop using, let alone lose the desire to use. Just stop using. I wasn't in my world. You know, so that was the life. And you know, on the outside, things looked okay, except they didn't. Everybody in my world thought I was insane. But not addicted. Maybe they did. I don't know. And so I'm watching Nick, and Nick is like falling down and getting stitches and coming back and losing this job and losing that job and all of that, and Nick's got a problem. And Nick starts disappearing. Some guy comes and picks him up, and he doesn't want to hang out anymore, except then I'm at his door like, yo, come on, yo, come on, yo, come on. He's like, ah, all right, we'll do this tomorrow. And eventually, you know, Nick got drunk one night. He and I got into it. I'm like, what's wrong with you? You got to stop drinking and all that. And the next day, I walked into his bedroom in the back. You know, it was real quiet. I walked down the hall, and like, I think I knew when I was opening the door, like what was happening, because you know how like a house feels different if there's somebody else in there or not? Like he was in the building, but like he wasn't in the building. And like, I knew And I opened the door, and he had hung himself on our back door and left a note that says, "I can't stop using. You know, I'm sorry, I can't stop using, I can't stop drinking." And then a bunch of other chaotic stuff. And like a good addict, I called my friend Steffi. I was like, "Yo, here's the deal. I gotta call the cops, but like, I'm not about to get rolled up in this. So I need you to come over so I can give you all of my stuff, right? You take this and then I'll call the cops." And so fast forward a week and a half, and I went to his funeral, and like, I lived with Nick for years. He was my boyfriend's childhood best friend. I thought I knew everything about him, except I walked into that funeral home and it was standing room only. It was packed full of people crying who I had no idea who they were. And that was his NA home group. And like, they were crying because they had watched him for months walk in and try to get a day clean. Like, when they were cleaning out, we were cleaning. I say we, like I did anything other than stand around and be like, "What is happening?" Piles of white key tags, just white key tags, no other color, white key tags and white key tags and white key tags, and all of those people. And it took me a minute. You know, my boyfriend and I, Mike, were standing around like, "What? How does he know all of these people? He's only gone for like 2 hours a day. You know, he's not working. Like, there's legit like 100 people in here." And yeah, that was Narcotics Anonymous. And we ended up figuring it out, kind of. Like, what we got was that there was a whole bunch of people in a place called NA that were really sad. And it took a little while of me trying to like do some investigation about like how are these people, partly because I was paranoid, right? Like, are they gonna come and get me, you know? And like, I don't know why, I was worried, like, can they get into my house? Like, there was anything other than like me in there. They're not trying to steal me, right? But at that point, like, I knew the seed was planted. And like, then I had like a friend go to treatment and come back, and she like was clean, and explained that she had, you know, people out here have heard this story. So she, a little while later, went to treatment, came back, and I went to her house because she went to treatment, and then instead of getting out and going to a meeting, she went back to her house and then called Sarah, who's still using, "Yo, I got a week clean, come on over, let's party." I'm like, "All right, word." And so we get over there, and her and her boyfriend have this coffee table that's like covered in stuff, including stickers, and there's this bumper sticker that says, "Spoons are for coffee." And I was like, "Where did you go in this last week?" And she's like, "Yo, they had a party at the convention center for junkies." And I'm like, "What?" She's like, "Yeah, there's like 10,000 junkies partying in the convention center, and they're giving them stickers." I was like, "What? Is this like the health department? Like this is really dangerous." And she's like, "Yeah, no, they have all sorts of stickers. Do you want to stop?" I was like, "I don't," but like, when she was playing, "Yeah, no, it's Narcotics Anonymous." Like, I was like, so they have a sense of humor? And like, almost more than that funeral, it implanted, like, that was a seed in me that, like, not only were they, like, right people trying to do the right thing that I didn't know how to do, but, like, they also knew what was up. They could make that joke. They knew why, like, we fought over that one spoon that was left in our house, right? And, like, played a game of, like, who has it, who's hidden it, or, you know. I accidentally bought too many spoons this past time when I moved, and like the pride I have when I open my silverware drawer and there's like way too many of like both sizes and they all fit together nicely. There's not like the angry one, you know? So the seed was planted, and like, you know, my story was like the seed didn't grow too fast, and what it was watered by was like some shit. It was watered by some darkness. It was watered by every Sunday that the pawn shops weren't open, because like I was done being able to make money, and so it was like whatever I could put my hands on would feed it. And it was like sitting, and all of a sudden like like using drugs that I never thought I would, in ways that I never thought I would, doing things I never thought I would, really considering doing things that like I never ever thought I would. And there wasn't some big moment. There wasn't some light. There wasn't some intervention. You know, I've heard a decent amount of stories in my life. And when I hear people be like, you know, the cops, they arrested me, or I'm sitting in a jail cell, or somebody interventioned me, or somebody just said to me, did you get kidnapped to come here? And I was like, yo, nobody was kidnapping me at the end. Like, nobody wanted to come near me. But I just remember like sitting in my car one day and like it being another morning and it gonna be, you know, the exact same thing and just being tired. Like, I mean, like, man, like, you know, it wasn't like I wanted to get high. Like, everybody knows here, you're not out partying. It's like years beforehand. You're like just trying to get like just enough to keep walking. Just enough to keep functioning, just enough to shut this up enough, and you know, and so there's this TV show called Lost that I haven't seen very much of, so I don't understand, so nobody talked to me about it afterwards, but the one part of one episode that I've seen is like on this island, there's a button that they have to like push every, I don't know if it's like every hour or every 45 minutes, there's some interval, and like if they don't go and press the button or type in a number or something, everything's gonna explode. And like when I saw that, like that was my addiction in a nutshell. Like I was gonna restart the timer, and no matter what, like I was heading toward destruction. And there was no part of me that was like, and ride it out, and it will be fine on the other side, and then become a good. It was just like at some point, it's gonna get worse and worse and worse. And yeah, I remember sitting there that day, and like knowing it was gonna be the same shit, and being like, dude, I just can't. I don't know what to do. And not like I don't know what to do. Like, oh, I'm in the solution. It was just like, man, like, I'm tired, I can't do it. You know, we say sick and tired of being sick and tired, and it was like, I might as well die now. And the thing is, like, I know that for a minute, drugs saved my life. Drugs saved my life because I didn't have any other solutions, you know? Like, like a lot of people in this room, I had some stuff happen to me, and like, I remember fantasizing about walking into a highway and going and getting high. I remember being like deeply broken after relationships ending and being blindsided and not knowing and getting hot. Like, that was all I had, you know? And so like knowing how I was at times, like it saved my life. But then I got to the point where I was like, I didn't even want to save my life. Save what? Save what? At the end, all I had was a car, because I didn't know you could pawn a car. You can, but like, that's how I ended up having, yeah, I got clean. People were like, yeah, you still have a car? I'm like, I'm not allowed to drive in the state of Delaware, and I haven't had legal tags for like years, but like, yeah, still got a car. And yes, yeah, so sitting in my car, and like, the God of my understanding put together a plan for me out of things that I wasn't seeking, and thank God that it, whatever, she, he, man, woman, whatever it is, did. And my plan was this. I'm gonna drive so far away from Baltimore that by the time I start getting dope sick, I'm so lost and confused and far away from my connect that I'll be too sick to drive to come back. And so for me, that was upstate New York. I had a childhood friend who was going to Cornell Law School, which was my plan, and then drugs, and then there wasn't any Cornell anymore. And he stopped talking to me years ago. Good for him. I'm grateful for the people who stopped talking to me early on because it was less apologizing. My addiction was like a nuclear blast. The closer people were to me, the more shrapnel and apologies I had to pull out later. So he was an easy amends because he saw early on, he's like, nope, I'm out. You're a hot mess. And so he said, you can call me when you're ready to change. And so my grand plan was go up there and ride out the dope sick. And if I die, so what? I already feel like I'm dead anyway. And And so I told some people before I was leaving, and they're like, well, what are you going to do? And I was like, I guess I'm going to go to an NA meeting. And that was the first NA meeting I walked into up there. And I went in expecting a solution. How do I sleep? How do I stop vomiting? All that kind of stuff. And they're like, oh, keep coming back. And I thought it was because it was like they were testing, or they were like evaluating to see if I could be a member. Because like I remember seeing like everybody in the room has showered today. Like me, I was wearing all the clothes that I owned. With various levels of like this sweater, we knotted out and burned a hole here. And then this one, it's here. So like the holes don't line up, you know? And a kid was 6 months, or a kid picked up 6 months who was young. And I remember watching him be like, yo, if that kid can get 6 months, like I might be able to do this. And so I was like, oh, I got these, I'm from Baltimore, but now I'm up here. I don't know what to do. I can't go back to where I was in and all of that. And they're like, oh, just keep coming back. I'm like, all right. So tomorrow they'll help me figure this out. You know, I come in the next day and I'm like, all right. I like slept for like 2 hours. I haven't thrown up today. What do I do? And they're like, oh, keep coming back. I'm like, all right. So by the Wednesday meeting, they're, you know, and eventually, thank God, this chick pulled me aside. She's like, you know, we don't really have like a travel planning committee or anything like that. But what we can tell you is like, probably don't go back to exactly where you came from. And so the only family that would let me in their house was in Florida, was in the, you know, in off of a dirt road in the middle of nowhere in Florida. And so I drove straight through and I got down there, and I didn't have any solutions. I didn't have any money. My family cut me off and all that. I went down with like $42 and family that let me in unless I mess up. And I got clean there. But like when I started being able to actually hear things in meetings, and I got that, like, when I asked, like, what do? I think the IRS is going to find me. And they would be like, this program is a spiritual program with a spiritual solution. I'd be like, no, I don't think you understand. The IRS is going to find me, you know, or the fact that, like, I do not know what to do with anything, you know. They're like, oh, this is a spiritual program. I didn't want to hear that. I didn't want to hear that this was a spiritual solution. Because for me, my problems felt very real. It felt like I haven't pooped in 2 weeks. I don't need a spiritual solution, right? Thank God for my first sponsor, who I could call and be like, Daphne, when do I do laundry? Because like I didn't have a life of plan. I'm like, Sunday we do laundry and we wash our face in the morning or whatever. Like I had to call because I was at some basic level of like, Daphne, do I shower every day? You know? And like, here's the thing though, like years and years later, somebody broke down spiritual to me in a way that like it cracked it open. Because for me, spiritual meant one of a couple of things. It meant people who went to church and got something out of it, weren't like me growing up going to church and being like, can I sneak out? Can I sneak out at communion? Can I sneak in at communion? You know, like, that was my whole thing. I wasn't going to church and enjoying it. People who went to church and enjoyed it. Hippies, they were spiritual. Like, Buddhist, you know, like, people who, like, looked Zen, you know, that whole thing. Spiritual wasn't something for me, and it definitely wasn't, because I thought it was a feeling. And, like, now sometimes it is a feeling. But when they said, spiritual is a ritual that brings our spirit alive. A spiritual awakening, our spiritual awakening, it isn't like one day we'll have that feeling. It's like our whole addiction was one day we'll have that feeling. Like, how elusive is that? We may have that feeling, but it's like, what ritual, what practices, what program do I put in my life to bring my spirit alive? And for me, that looked like I found myself in Florida. I didn't deserve to be there, but I got there because this is a program of mercy, not justice. We don't get what we deserve. Like, we get mercy here. And thank God. thank God. And it looks like me getting up in the morning and going to a meeting and being okay. It looks like me calling somebody else. It looks like me trying to be 1% better, or if not, at least not 1% worse. And if I am, apologizing for it. For me, it looks like step work and step work and step work, which isn't work, right? Like, the funny thing about step work is it's only painful if you're not doing it, right? And then, like, once you've done it, you're like, okay, so, like, I've been leaving cash on the table this whole time. Nobody else can tell you the rewards you're going to get from step work. And it kind of seems like those of us who've done a lot of step work, like, we're cocky, like, we're flexing on you, like, we've done step work, what are you doing? But it's not that. It's like when you've done it and you've been like, you don't understand the gift, like, what's behind door number one in all sorts of ways. You know, and so, so it's a spiritual, a ritual of spirits that gets me through the day, gets me through the year, gets me through the good times. And so what's the point of that? Why do we do that? Why is it a spiritual program? So I want to read my favorite part of, The Green and Gold. It's, page 112, from step 11. And it says, we see that, regardless of the presence or absence of material success in our lives, we can be content. We can be happy and fulfilled with or without money, with or without a partner, with or without the approval of others. We've begun to see that God's will for us is the ability to live with dignity, to love ourselves and others, to laugh, and to find great joy and beauty in our surroundings. So that ritual of spirit, that's what leads me to freedom, right? So active addiction was a prison for me. I've heard for other people it's the same experience, right? No freedom there. We're doing one thing. We got one mission. And every other side quest is to in pursuit of that mission. Every try not to get rolled up in this, or try to convince them, or maybe this and all of that, it's all in that. And that one mission of self-centeredness, that one mission, that's it. There is no freedom. There is no choice. And we talk about that this is a program of freedom. So that first freedom, right, we can stop using. That was freedom. When I got here and I found out there were people who had like 3 days clean, that was mind-blowing. I didn't even want to think about years, right? I was sitting next to somebody who was 22, somewhere between 22 and 30 days. When I got here, that was an old-timer. You went a month without use? That's insane. I can make it through a day. Not without using something. There were the good days where you used what you wanted to, and the not good days where you used weird stuff, right? But like, there wasn't a day without, there wasn't a choice in the matter. And then we lose the desire to use. And for me, that was mystifying, and not even why I got here. For me, it was so bad that it was like, if I can stop using, even if I continue to want to use, if I have some upper hand on that desire to use for the rest of my, like, that's better. But like, through step work, through time, through unity, through connection, I did lose the desire to use. Like, years ago. It doesn't even cross my mind. It's like, if I was to wake up today and somebody were like, so green beans don't exist anymore, I would have not an emotional reaction to that. I'd be like, that's kind of weird, right? But like, is that gonna pull at my heartstrings? I'm like, oh, I miss it or whatever. And like, that's how I feel about drugs and alcohol. I have no emotional connection to it. I don't, every once in a while, I can tell you the last two times where I strongly wanted to use. Once was 2 months ago, and once was about 5 years ago on a Tuesday when the guy I was dating who I shouldn't have been relapsed, came home and smelled like crack. And I smelled him, and like, I had a physical reaction, right? And then that third part, find a new way to live. Like, when I talk about cash on the table from step work, it's that. When I talk about, like, we have a program of mercy, it's because, for me, what I've done in recovery does not reflect the person I was to get here. It you know, I got clean with $42. I owed a lot of work that I'd already been paid for, and so I spent a couple of months catching up because I knew that, like, it would get worse if I didn't, just like this little gig and this little hustle and all of that. And I was locked in on the fact that, like, I work for myself, right? Like, so does every, you know, corner boy. They also work for themselves. But I remember my sponsor being like, you know, you could get a job at the grocery store. Oh, no, I work for myself. And eventually she was like, so you know your boss has less than a year clean. I'm like, all right, yep. And so, like, I did. I eventually got a job working for somebody else, and it was hard, and like conforming and all that. And I did a lot of bumping my head up and being angry and all of that. And step work helped, and meetings helped, and all of that. And I am grateful that I had people in my life who locked me in on what was important in those early years. Like, I watch people get a job, make a little bit of money, and like buy a new car, and they're like, man, because I was still driving the same piece that I couldn't pawn that I came down with. And they're like, no, you're putting in work, you're doing the footwork. And I had got a cheap apartment that came pre-furnished, not in a nice sort of way. And it didn't have a washer and dryer in it. And so I did my laundry at a laundromat for almost 5 years clean. And I didn't want to. But the IRS found me before my ninth step. And they were like, so either we can take everything from you, or you can give it to us in little increments. But like, I had a sponsor who was like, hey man, like, that is part of your ritual spirit. She didn't use those words, but she was like, that is the footwork. That's what we're doing. We're building. We're in that building mode. And I'm glad I did, because it was in that period of time, it was in that like one day at a time that I built the muscle memory of this program. I built the ritual spirit. God as a word that was comfortable to me, it took me about 6 years for me to be okay saying that and not flinching. It took about 6 years for me to start praying. It took me being in a relationship, working steps 1, 2, 3, 4, getting into 4 and realizing that I was probably going to have to write about the person I was in a relationship with and how awkward that would be. And like, no, you don't understand. I have my N.A. Romeo and Juliet story. I went away, I got clean, he got clean in Baltimore, reunited, both with 4 months clean, and immediately moved in together. And like, it's fine. I don't need to have friends because he's clean and I'm clean. And like, yeah, we'll go to meetings every weekend. That'll be like our family outing, right? And then like, he's not going to meetings, but it's okay because he'll stay clean and I'll go to meetings for both of us. No, I'll go to meetings. And then I'm just going to the women's meeting because like, that's fine. I just need female friends. And then when they're weird and the friends that I got clean with, they all relapse, I'm not making new friends because I've got, you know what I mean? And then the world gets smaller and smaller and smaller, and I'm not realizing that, like, yeah, I have a higher power, and his name is Mike, and he's not working a program, right? And it's all fine until the variables change, and all of a sudden he says, I don't want to do this anymore because I don't think I got a problem. I don't think I want to stay clean. And he walks away, and all of a sudden I'm godless. And at that point, I started praying. Not because I thought there was something to believe in, but because what else do I do? I'm in my car, I'm tired, what else am I gonna do, right? When at the end of the road, when at the end of the road. And I'm in my second round of steps now. That first round of steps took me on a journey through spirituality, took me through a journey of freedom that I didn't imagine. When I was finished step 12, I was so excited to get back into one. And this round of steps that I'm on right now, like, I think I know freedom, and like, there's so much more. So what I read, with or without, like, that for me today is spirituality. Because like, my disease says only with or only without, only with drugs, only without that problem. only with the approval of my partner, my business partner, my friends, my family, only without this issue, only without this extra weight, only with this house, only without that car problem. There's not freedom in that. My disease, my dis-ease, my natural dis-ease, which I have every day. Everybody who stayed in cabin one knows that I wake up with dis-ease. I wake up with my dis-ease, and everybody knows to not make eye contact. And it's there all the time. That's what I'm fighting, right? Like, I'm not good in my skin naturally. I have to have a ritual of my spirit to get me right, to fight that dis-ease. Because I used to just shut it off. I used to numb it, smoke that thing, put that needle in my arm, drink that thing, do this thing, sleep with that person, buy that thing, and like just for a second it'll be quiet. Except I'm not doing that anymore. So now I gotta find out what else quiets the water. And the more that I find things that I'm so sure it's only with or without, and I dismantle what's under it through step work, and I get that like what I'm trying to do when I am chasing that person is feel love. And like it's unfair for me to strap that on another person, because I can get that from NA, I can do it from esteemable acts, I can do it from the God of my understanding. Or what I'm trying to get is self-esteem. Or what I'm trying to get is quieting down my fear about finances. Or all of those other things. When I look at like the places where with or without isn't true and I pull that apart, that's the freedom of this program. So I'll wrap it up with this. The irony of me being asked to be the spiritual speaker. So I was sure that this was a spiritual retreat. It's apparently a unity retreat. I was under the impression that I was the spiritual speaker, but that like y'all would have already gotten really good ones. And then like there was me at the end to be like, so what did you miss? You know? I think it's kind of cool though that for me, like it says unity and I heard spiritual. I heard spirituality. It's like I came here not knowing anything about what to do. And NA in so many forms, the unity of the program is what got me here. I have called people I hated in the midst of something going on and gotten help. I have reached out to people that I have fussed with in area service that I'm like, yeah, you talk good in a meeting, but then we get to area and all of a sudden you're like that. And like saved another addict's life with them. I've been to meetings all over. I've felt like a newcomer. I moved back to Baltimore a couple of years ago, and I felt like a weirdo newcomer all over again. But like, I wanted to tell people, like, no, you don't understand. I have 11 years, right? It was a weird and humbling flex. And they're like, you can pick up a white key tag. I'm like, but like, it is the unity for me. It's the fact that like my outside world, I know like all I gotta do is make it through a week and I can get to my home group, my safe space, my home group. Your home group isn't home, keep searching. It might not be the right meeting for you. It may not be that you're coming to it and making it home. Like the best thing about NA is like when we get to realize that we're not participating in somebody else's program. We don't have to be in the audience. It's our recovery. It's our life. If there's another one, we may not remember it anyway. So this is our recovery, our fellowship, our program, my program. NA is my program, it's my home group, and it's yours, right? We all get to own this. We get out of it. We can sit and wait for something to happen, but like, I love that I get to always affect the quality of my clean time. I can only get a day at a time, but what I do in every day, that's always up to me. And how I get that is unity, how I get that is people in this room, and how I get it is being the Sunday morning speaker when somebody asks me. Thank you for letting me share.
I'd like to thank the speaker for sharing their experience, strength, and hope with us. We have a nice way of closing, form circle, and close with the we version of serenity prayer. We'd just like to thank everybody for coming this weekend. It's been wonderful. We love you all.